Welcome, everybody. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. We are going to begin today with a public hearing on Senate Bill 1532, and we have Senator Steiner Hayward here with us, and Representative Ben Unger will be given an opportunity to testify when he's done with the floor. But first of all, Paul, let's start out with a summary of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1532 addresses the allocation that's called for the Shared Services Fund. You recall you had a couple of bills dealing with this last session. It dates back to a fund that was created by the legislature in 2007 in Senate Bill 954. It calls for an estimate of income tax revenue associated with SIP projects in the state in which they are shared with local governments in which the SIP project is located. But what this bill does is it modifies the way the revenue is calculated for the Shared Service Fund. It requires a DAS to separately state personal income tax revenue attributed to newly created jobs and retained jobs. Directs Department of Administrative Service to transfer 5% of estimated local income tax revenue associated with the project to the Local Economic Opportunity Fund. Under current law, there's no allocation to that fund, so this would be a change in the current allocation. The Shared Service Fund is to receive 50% of the remaining income tax revenue identified with new and retained jobs, and that calculation specified in statute. There is an exception to this for counties in which projects generate tax revenue of more than $5 million, and that's Washington County, which has the vast bulk of SIP income tax identified revenue. In that county, 40% of the identified income tax revenue in the fund would be allocated back to the county. So, and then the other 60% to the state. The bill also changes the sunset dates. The Shared Service Fund agreements now, the Shared Service Fund calculation sunsets 1/1/19. Under the changes here, they would any projects between 2008 and 2024 that were still eligible for the property tax exemption, the calculation would continue until those projects are over. And then new projects entered into after January 1, 2024 the calculation would not be done after that date for new projects. I also put together an estimate of what we think how this would affect the allocation. Revenue. Should be. It's entitled Revenue Implications.
I have a paper copy. Do the other committee members have a?
I have several paper copies. Yes.
Just right here.
Yeah, I have it.
Yes.
But it's not on there.
I think it's under something else.
Is it under preliminary?
Maybe it's under the bill.
Or is it under the preliminary SMS?
It's under Rep. Unger final fact sheet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
This is. This one right here is Rep. Unger.
Right. This not. Yeah. This
that's
not.
Different.
That's different.
That's something else. Oh, well then I don't find it either.
It's the one I just gave you before lunch. We can be specific about it. Anyway, why don't I walk through those numbers real quick, and we'll find where that is to show you the table. Under the current law allocation, the Shared Service Fund, $75.6 million. Goes to the Shared Service Fund for the 15-17 biennium. There it is right there. So $75.6 million goes to the Shared Service Fund in the current biennium, which is $75.6 million in income tax revenue that shifted from the general fund to the Shared Service Fund. Under the proposal in 1532, that Shared Service Fund allocation would drop to $63.2 million. That's for the 40% allocation of retained jobs. We're basing that estimate on retained jobs based on the 13-14 estimate is what we have for the calculation. And in that estimate, 18% of the income generated from the SIP projects is from retained jobs. 18% for new jobs, 82% for retained jobs.
So most of what the state is paying out to Washington County is for jobs that were already there, not the new jobs.
These are retained jobs that have moved from earlier facilities to the new SIP project.
Okay.
So 82% of the income is associated with the retained jobs, 18% for the new jobs. And the new allocation going from 50 to 40 only applies to the retained jobs. So the general fund impact drops from minus 75.6 to minus 70.8, a net gain of 4.8%, $4.8 million for the general fund. And the new local opportunity fund, or it's not a new fund, but the new allocation to it is $7.6 million. The numbers for 17-19 incorporate the anticipated sunset under current law. So we have basically the $40.5 million to the shared service fund is 1 year for the 18-19 for the 17-18 fiscal year. That's built into the forecast you heard last week. And under this proposal, we would extend the existing projects out. Program itself out through 2024. We would estimate that the shared service fund allocation would be about $69.7 million with that additional year added on. State general fund impact minus about 77.9. Then you got 8.3 million for the local opportunity fund. So those are preliminary numbers, but that's based on the proportions that are spelled out in 1532.
And these numbers don't take into account any new SIPs that might be put into effect.
Madam Chair, they are not specifically. The way the forecast is built, it basically we use the numbers we know about now through the current projects and the numbers that we've worked with Business Oregon on, and we're currently the current operations. But going forward, basically the state economist allows it to grow at the rate of the overall economy. And as you know, these kinds of projects, you either get one or you don't. So you're likely to see big jumps in that number if you get a new project coming in. So we have not built that into the baseline estimates.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll question you more on that later. We have a colleague on deadline for another committee. So I want to welcome you, Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner-Hayward, State Senator from District 17, which incorporates Northwest Portland, unincorporated Multnomah and Washington counties, and a portion of Beaverton. I am not going to dive into the specifics of this bill. I'm not a revenue expert, as you are, Madam Chair, and other members of this committee. What I am is somebody who cares deeply about finding fair solutions to sticky problems, and this is undoubtedly a sticky problem. So I've had the privilege of working closely with you and with many others since during the 2013 session, trying to find a balance here that would help alleviate the impact of some misunderstandings when this bill was originally crafted, and I wasn't here there, and make sure that the state did not have too much money taken from the general fund, but the county still got a chunk of this money to offset some of the losses associated with the SIPs and to meet the needs of services and schools. There are about a million different ways to dice this and slice this. You can calculate the percentages in lots of different ways. I think the message that I really want to bring to this committee is that the communities that are involved are eager to work to a constructive solution that meets everyone's needs. And I think have demonstrated this by their willingness to come and meet with you, Madam Chair, and with me and other members of the Washington County delegation, and think about how to find a balance that meets the needs of schools, of the state, of the services that aren't being provided, and thinks about creative solutions to this problem. I'll let those who are more versed on the real nuances, as certainly Mr. Warner did just beautifully right now, go into the details of the different options. But I just wanted to lay the groundwork of what we've been doing for the past 9 months now in terms of how we've been thinking about it, and then leave the details to others. So.
Thank you. And I want to give a special thank you to you for your hard work on this. This is a short session. This is a issue of potentially pretty large revenue impact on the general fund. So we won't be planning on trying to force a solution during this short session. But I wanted to thank you for your work and for your motivation to try to reach a fair solution. And we'll continue to work on this in the interim. And we need to broaden out the discussion beyond just those of us who represent Washington County.
Sure.
Which is a fair number on this committee, like the majority of the committee, and you, and a few others. And it really is an issue of statewide significance because
yes.
of the, it's, you know, pretty substantial revenue impact.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, for your kind words. And as always, I remain at your service and eager to keep working and happy to be helpful. Thank you for inviting me to testify today.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. We'll send you off to your real job.
I'll go sit on the other side of the dais on a different committee. Thank you.
It'll still be about money.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we will have Representative Unger.
Whatever they're doing outside sounds a lot more fun than what we're doing inside.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Ben Unger, and I'm State Representative for House District 29, which encompasses much of Western Washington County, the communities of downtown Hillsborough, Cornelius and Forest Grove, Verbort and Roy as well. I submitted some written comments, and I, too, won't take a lot of your time. I know this is a longer discussion than what we're going to do here this afternoon, but I wanted to at least share some of the work that we've been doing over on the House side, trying to learn more about this important program and figuring out how to make it work best. Let me start off by saying that I think GainShare is an important program. The state should share in the economic development responsibility that local government currently bears quite a bit of the shoulder for. We should be a part of that. But how we do it is really important, and I think, Madam Chair, you've helped lead a discussion, and I appreciate trying to figure out the best way to make GainShare work. Some of the things that I've spent my time on in the interim have been focused on going back and revisiting why we created this program to begin with, and my written comments point to the fact that in 2007 we talked a lot about the essential services that were lost when local governments abate large taxes, when they give away so much of the money that the services that people rely on them for every single day are hurt. I believe that making sure that GainShare can replace those lost services is its core mission. I worry in its current iteration that it does much more than that. If you look at the way that the city of Hillsborough and that Washington County are planning to spend the GainShare monies that they've received or expect to receive, much of that money doesn't go to essential services. For example, the city of Hillsborough, its general fund budget, over half of its general fund budget is for public safety, and yet none of their GainShare dollars go to public safety. Now, I'm not trying to say that we ought to tell the city and the county how to spend the money that we give them. It's their decision, but it's up to us to make sure that the money that we give is commensurate to the losses that the county and the city have. And I don't know if we've quite gotten that right yet. And I think it's our duty to evaluate what they're doing with those dollars and make sure that our intended effect is actually happening there close to home. One other piece that's important to me is that we figure out how schools and schools are affected by these abatements, how they're treated in the GainShare program. Currently in the statute, there's no mandatory allocation from the state back to the local schools that are affected when these tax abatements occur. I think there's a couple of different ways that we could address schools in this manner. One way would be, as we're calculating GainShare payments, to not count the school dollars that are abated as part of the calculation. We should just say, well, the school dollars aren't really the counties and the cities aren't losing out when they abate school dollars because they're not their dollars to begin with. So there's no reason to reimburse them for those losses. We should just set those aside and maybe put those just back into schools. There might be other ways to think about it as well. There might be some way to actually say, well, the local schools actually ought to get a little bit of money because they're taking on so much of the burden of the local services that are required when new businesses move into communities. I think addressing the school issue is an important one, and we ought to make sure that schools are seen as equals in this discussion along with cities and counties as we figure out the right way to make sure that our entire communities are served by the businesses that we bring here and the services that we provide. There's more to say, but I'll leave it at that. That's more than enough for this afternoon, and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Well, I just want to pursue one of the points you make, and I'm skipping ahead because we're about to receive, we're about to get a briefing on a report, an economic impact report pertaining to Intel, and most of the gain share, almost all of it that comes to Washington County is because of retained jobs from Intel. And you talk about losses to public services. We're about to hear a report that says that Intel has a positive economic impact of $106 million when you add it all up, just in property taxes. So that's $106 million, you know, under the SIPs that they're in. So I'm wondering how you define losses.
Losses of services, Madam Chair?
Yes.
How do I define it? Well, that's a fair question. I don't know if I have a great definition of losses. That, unlike some tax break and tax abatement programs, I think the SIP is one of the most difficult to figure out where the loss is, because so much of the loss is what we would have gotten if the business that came here, which might not have come here, would have paid if we wouldn't have given them a break, but they might not have come. So it's difficult to ascertain what the loss is, which I think makes it very difficult to ascertain what the state's share in the return on the investment is. What should we give back? And is Gainshare a program that's designed to simply, as if you go back and listen to the testimony in 2007, simply to replace essential services that are lost when abatements occur, or is it more of a partnership where it's seen as everyone should share in the spoils of economic development, and when that happens, we ought to give our local cities and counties a share of our reward when they bring jobs here. I guess I go back to the Intel has clearly had such a positive benefit on our community and our state. It's hard to determine what we've lost. But I'm sure there's something that we've lost. They also have quite a bit of, as I think our cities and counties will tell you, an infrastructure demand on our community. So it's a difficult question, which is, I think, why this is such a difficult issue.
Madam Chair.
Senator George.
Representative, thank you for being an expert on this, because normally I wouldn't ask tougher questions to representatives, but since you're engaged in this, here's what I think what the chair has raised and has had influence on all of us. So, really, the question we're trying to get to is, what is the if not for question,
right?
So let's say, for instance, I had a building that was just simply a cold storage facility or a warehouse building that had the same number of trips as Intel, the same amount of infrastructure, had the same amount, but didn't have billions of dollars of equipment inside, right? So what is the impact of that infrastructure, and what would it pay in taxes versus what Intel does, right? And by Washington County providing that incentive to bring in Washington County, there was some gain. But it seems like the loss is any amount that doesn't cover, if you just had a warehouse come in with the same number of trips, that's your base of what the cost would be to the community, and then there would be property taxes that offset that. So are the property taxes they're getting back in offsetting what the base operational cost would be if it was any other business with the same footprint, the same number of traffic, and then perhaps and share back with Washington County some additional benefit on top of that? Do you understand what I'm saying? Have you done any kind of analysis like that?
Madam Chair, Senator George, I haven't done any analysis like that. But that question, I think, runs right to the core of what we're trying to determine is, if we're really trying to make sure that cities and counties aren't at a loss, they're not supporting businesses that are actually stressing their infrastructure in a way that makes them lose money and lose investment that they could put in other places, then that's a problem. We shouldn't put them in a disadvantage just because they're doing a good job of bringing jobs here.
Helping the state.
That's right, because they help everyone. So I think our challenge is, how do we define that, if not for, in a way that is fair both to local government, to the state, and to schools? It touches all of them in a variety of different ways, but I have not had a chance to do that kind of that. That's pretty sophisticated stuff. That's I might have listened to some hearing tapes, but I haven't done the kind of economic analysis that you described.
And we don't want to put you on the spot, but I think what we're trying to get at is, you know, I'm not seeing, having looked at this economic report that we're about to see, I'm not seeing where there is actually anything that has been lost in Washington County, and I see tons that has been gained. And so if there are losses, if there are infrastructure pressures that that have occurred because of the additional employees, because of the additional traffic, whatever, I'd want to have those documented, because that was the rationale for passing gain share in the first place, is the pressure on the infrastructure and providing some way of compensating for that.
Madam Chair, agreed. That was the original rationale for why we needed gain share, was to make sure that we were compensating for those infrastructure stresses, but also for the law, for the perceived loss of service that may occur. I go back to the public safety example, because in 2007, so much was made of the increased demands on a fire department and a police department and a sheriff's department because of having all of this new area and these new businesses and all this high-tech equipment that maybe needs special fire equipment to fight. I actually think that those are some pretty valuable investments that the counties and cities ought to be able to be afford to make if they're going to protect the assets that they've helped bring here. Figuring out how much is difficult. That's why one of the reasons why I kind of think, as we look forward on gain share, we might think about how do we create a percentage system, perhaps, that caps the amount of money the state gives as a percentage of the abatement, that also requires that there's some job threshold like we currently have. So that way, there's a sense that we have a little bit more control of how big this pot gets. But this will be a longer discussion in the interim, and we'll become experts on all the things that Senator George is hoping for us to get experts on as well. It's an interesting topic.
Right. And so I think what we're really trying to get at is Intel has put, and I don't mean to single out one company, this just happens to be, you know, the reality in Washington County. They have had this enormous economic contribution, and, you know, where is it, despite its enormity, where is it falling short?
That's right.
You know, where is the gap? I'm not seeing the gap. And that's what I think we need to look at in terms of setting an appropriate level for gain share.
Madam Chair, I agree.
Thank you.
Thank you, committee.
Other
I appreciate
questions?
Your time.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Are you still on the floor?
No, we're done.
Okay. All right. Next, we'll go to Dr. Warner to talk about the aforementioned report.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have a report on the impact of Intel's Oregon operations prepared by Echo Northwest. And this was actually the fourth time that they've done this. This is a 2012 report. And what I'll do is I'll walk through that with you, a bit about the methodology. I won't go into the individual equations or anything. So I'll stick with the findings and summarize that. I did want to say a couple of things leading into this. And because this period covers the time when I had the opportunity to be state economist from 1989 to 1999. And during that period, I think there were really two major events that stand out in terms of the structure of Oregon's economy. The first one was in 1990, was the release of the Jack Ward Thomas Report, which was really what spelled out federal forest policy and what was to come from that. Back at that time, the state was harvesting well over 8.5 billion board feet annually in the state's forests, and over half of that was coming from federal forests. And that plan ended up leading to structural changes throughout the state, and most of those estimates were pretty accurate. But what we didn't anticipate was the transformation that was brought on, and really highlighted by the beginning of the strategic investment program. And by the way, the first hearing of that was in this room in 1993 at the end of the session. And that's what led to the major Intel operations in 1994 and beyond. And that's what this report gets at, the beginning of that. And just to give you a sense of kind of the magnitude of that change, lumber and wood products employment went from about 67,000 in 1989. Now it's a little less than 20,000. whereas the electronics has gone from about 15,000 up to almost 37,000. And I think probably the most startling number is around the value of output in the computer and electronics sector, which, of course, Intel is by far the major player. There's about $37.8 billion in value added in the state economy from computer and electronics, and that is 20.3% of Oregon's gross domestic product. So it's 20% of the economy from that one sector in terms of its impact. Oregon, by the way, has the second largest percentage of manufacturing of any state at 27.8%. And of that 27%, 20% is computer and electronics. So you get almost 80% of it. So you get a sense of the magnitude of the impact of that sector, in which Intel has been a leader. A couple of other things I think really stand out. One is that 35% of our exports are from the computer and electronics sector. That's by far the biggest in the sector. And the output per employee in this sector, the output per worker, per employee, is $1.06 million. So it's a huge value-added sector, and has what that means in economic terms is it has very major effects both backward in terms of the suppliers it has and going forward on the overall economy through consumers and the amount of money that circulates through. So the report has a couple of pages about how Intel is in terms of kind of some general statistics. The first one I'll draw your attention to is figure 1 on page 3. So that this shows we don't have a private employer number statewide, because this is information the Employment Department can't release. But we do have, from the Portland Business Journal, the metro area largest employers. And these pretty much would be reflective of the top ones in terms of the largest in the state. But you'll notice that Intel is the largest in the Portland metro area, and we think the largest private employer in the state with a little over 16,000. These are full-year equivalent jobs, as you'll see when we go through the calculation. Another important thing about this table is that if you look at these employers, and there's public and private employers here, if you look at these employers, there are only two of them, Intel and Nike, that are traded sector employers. And, of course, you know that the traded sector employers are those that are geared, their output is geared toward exporting outside the state's boundaries, and they bring in income from outside and generate multiplier effects and create a lot of the jobs in these other sectors or other other entities like Fred Meyer, for example, or Providence Health System. They're domestic sector jobs which are generated by income coming from the traded sector. In terms of employment, the numbers used in this report, they were from Intel themselves, about 16,576. This is a full-year equivalent estimate. And the average annual income for those employees is $168,000. So that, of course, is why we also get very large numbers when we look at the gain share calculations, because those averages are very large. And what we do is we don't try to estimate a specific income tax revenue. We just take a percentage of what the wages are reported and just take the average for that wage level, and that's how we calculate the SIP numbers. In terms of the methodology for this report, it's spelled out, I think, pretty clearly in the report. It's what we call an input-output model. An input-output model is what it does is it measures the flow of commodities and resources between industries and households, so within and outside the region. So it's an effort to link the supply and demand between suppliers to firms and from firms to their individual markets. So you have workers supplying labor services to the market. You have firms supplying output to the market, consumers buying it. But you also have firms that are buying a lot of things in the state. They're buying services or parts from other suppliers. So you have what we call both the backward linkages onto your suppliers, and the forward linkages is how that particular firm will affect the overall economy through consumption, basically. The specific model used by EchoNorthwest was the M-Plan modeling system. It's very widely used. We have it. We have M-Plan at LRO. We also, a lot of state agencies use it. Department of Forestry has used it extensively over the years. Department of Transportation uses it. Business Oregon uses it. So very widely used and well-respected as an input-output model. There are some limitations of those models, and I'll talk about those very briefly at the end. There are three types of impacts that are estimated. The first is called direct impacts. Those are the impacts associated directly with the Intel operations. So that would, your direct employees would be the folks that are getting paid by Intel to work there. So that's your direct employment. Indirect impacts are those that work backwards to other firms. So if you're buying any kind of service or materials from other firms, then that's an indirect impact. Induced impacts are when the Intel employees would go to the local grocery store, the local gas station, and purchase things. That's an induced impact or a consumption effect. The three of those are added up, and then the impacts are shown in terms of overall output, which would be analogous to the gross national product or gross state product in this case. Personal income, which is essentially payroll and self-employment income. Full year equivalent jobs, we mentioned too. And the other thing that the report does, it takes each of those measures, output, income, and jobs, and breaks them down by Washington County, Portland metro area, and statewide. So you can see what those look like from each of those levels. So the first table is for operations, and it is on table one on page 7. And you can see this is from the operations itself. And I mentioned the employment number, so that's the number that's plugged in, that's 16,576. There is an output number. This is that output per employee we mentioned, which is about $20 billion, $20.7 billion, which is a huge number. The overall GDP of the state's a little less than $200 billion right now. Mm-hmm. I believe the 11 number is 180. 10%. Yes, almost 10%. So if you look at the income numbers, those are the wages and proprietor's income, but predominantly wages, including benefits that are associated with the project. You can see that the direct job numbers, and these numbers are all strictly, the Washington County numbers are basically the Oregon numbers. So there's a little difference. There's no difference between the two in terms of the direct. So the direct effects are all within Washington County. When you go to the indirect effects, you have suppliers that are located in throughout the metro area, and even some in Clark County, for example, and other parts of the of Oregon. But you can see that output there for these indirect effects is about $213 million. And the induced effects, which are large, again, because you have you have high wages, so you're going to have a higher level of consumption, even though the percentage of consumption is less. So you have a total output effect in Washington County of about $22.2 billion. You have 16,576 direct jobs and an estimated total when you add up the induced and indirect of about 30,000 jobs. Notice that the induced is pretty large, again, because those tend to be service jobs, retail jobs that have a lower, certainly a lower average wage than the direct jobs. And then you can see that the metro area extends out and then the statewide numbers. So if you just look at the job numbers, you've got about 30,000 jobs identified in Washington County through all the different measures, direct, indirect, and induced. Statewide, it's about 40,000. So about 75% of the jobs would be of the statewide jobs there in Washington County by these estimates. There is a table that, or a figure on page 9 that you can see where the jobs are located by county. And these are estimates done by Echo Northwest. And of the 16,700 jobs, a little over 13,000 are located in Washington County. And then Multnomah, Clackamas County, and some, of course, in Clark County, though really, really a fairly small amount, Columbia County, Yamhill County, and then the rest of the state. So that gives you a sense of where they're located. And there's even a more detailed chart showing where their residents are throughout the Portland metro area that doesn't show up very well on the overhead. The report also goes in and looks at capital spending. Then those were the impacts of operations. Capital spending, of course, is very erratic, and it's on table 2, page 10. You can see the capital spending amounts. There was about $4 billion in capital spending in 2012 when these estimates were done. Most of these jobs tend to be temporary. They're construction jobs, but nonetheless, they can be someone can be high-paying, and they can have a significant impact in the economy. An operation like Intel's, for example, will always have a capital budget, so they'll always be replacing things or repairing things, as well as periodically carrying out major construction projects.
Senator Hess.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Why are the zeros there under direct? I'm missing something very basic, I think.
Same question.
The capital spending projects, the direct jobs are associated strictly with the operations. They're a full-year equivalent estimate. So what they've done with the indirect jobs is they've tied them back to the overall construction industry. It's more or less kind of the way that they present it. They don't want to indicate that these jobs are associated with that particular location through these direct jobs. These are all indirect jobs that are associated with the capital project itself. They're not full-time employees of Intel.
But this is capital projects for Intel.
Yes, these are capital projects for Intel, but these are not employees of Intel. So they don't count as direct jobs.
And what would induced be in that context?
Well, the induced jobs would be the construction workers, and of course this is a pretty mobile labor force that does construction work. They would come in. They could live in temporary quarters. They could, of course, they're going to be consuming items in the local mm-hmm. economy. So those would be the induced effects.
Okay.
And see, they notice that they're a lot smaller relative to the indirect effects than we saw in the case of the operations, because mm-hmm. we assume these are transitory type employment.
Right. Okay.
So that gives you a sense on the capital spending. There's also some interesting calculations on charitable contributions, but I won't go into that. The bottom line numbers are the combined economic effects, which you find on table 5, page 12, because that combines the three categories they use, which is the operations, the capital, and then the charitable contributions. And you see that this is Echo Northwest's estimate of the impact of Intel on the county economy and on the overall state economy. So these are the bottom line numbers. You can see that those 16,576 jobs translate into an estimated 67,579 statewide. So those of you thinking in terms of multipliers, the multiplier for Washington County is 3.0. And what that means is that for every one job at a direct job at Intel, you have two additional jobs. So in other words, the 16,500 translate into about 33,000 additional jobs. So 2-to-1 ratio. The statewide, you have a wider impacts in terms of particularly induced effects and indirect effects. So that translates into about 3.1 or about 4.1 for a multiplier, or about 3.1 for each additional Intel job. So each job at Intel with that average wage that's assumed would generate 3.1 additional jobs.
Now, wait a minute. How does that differ from what you said before in terms of the 3.0?
The 3.0 multiplier applies to Washington County. The 4.1 applies statewide.
Got it. Okay.
Statewide is going to be a little bigger because you have those broader effects. The way that multipliers work is the more leakages you have, the smaller they are. And so if the smaller the contained area you're analyzing, then the more things are bought outside the region, and then it leaks out and doesn't recycle within the region. So the bigger the region, the bigger the multiplier in general. So, but these are large multipliers. One thing multipliers are larger in impact input-output type analysis because they detail the indirect effects. A lot of times you'll see multipliers that are really just going from direct to induced. In other words, they're forward-looking or demand-side effects. The input-output models incorporate these indirect effects, and so you have a little bit bigger multipliers for that reason. And also, of course, just because you have high wages and you have a very capital-intensive sector that's buying a lot of stuff from the state economy. So those are the reasons why you see bigger multipliers. Now, being policymakers for state government, the other question is the fiscal impacts. That's you can find those on table 6, page 14, goes through this is not a total fiscal impact, what we would call in this committee hearing room a revenue impact. These are just income taxes and property taxes, and you can see that the property taxes there shows up for Washington County. These are the direct property taxes paid by Intel to the taxing districts within Washington County. It's not just to the county, to all the taxing districts. And it does not include the community service fee that's negotiated between the SIP participant and the local governments. You recall how that works. That's a product of the negotiation process, and that's about $11 million in estimated dollars from the agreement. That's also contained in the report, but it doesn't show up in these numbers. And you can see the income tax estimates. These are a little different than the income tax estimates we do for the SIP. Our goal in that bill was to try to make them as straightforward as we could in terms of the calculation, so we only tied them back to wages. This is an estimate of trying to get overall income taxes for individuals that would be at this income levels that's generated by the Intel operations. So you can see that the direct effects in terms of income tax revenue generated in the county is about $89.8 million for 2012, it's the vast bulk of what you see for the state overall on the direct side. But in terms of the indirect, the state receives about $192 million from all impacts for the income tax, $192.2 million, $162.5 million of which comes from the direct, indirect, and induced effects in Washington County itself.
And how do you get to 192?
192, as you can see, it's summed up there under Oregon. It's the Oregon calculation in the bottom box there. And it's just the same breakup that you do, the indirect effects and the induced effects added in. So if you add up in terms of property tax revenue, and of course we do know that property tax revenue in the state, almost 40% of property tax revenue goes to our local revenue projections that you just saw updated last week. And so that's about $135 million. And so you total those two, you have about $327.7 million in revenue generated from property taxes and income taxes combined.
Okay, so but for Washington County, it's $106 million plus the $11 million community service fee.
Yes, that's within Washington County. That's the direct, what would be paid by Intel itself, indirect by Intel suppliers, and then an estimate of what the induced effects is, and that's primarily residents of Washington County that are Intel employees and the secondary effects that they create. Okay. So those are estimated based on averages for the county. So that gives you a sense of what the revenue impact is. A couple of things I'll say about the limitations of this type of analysis. This is what we call a partial equilibrium analysis. It's a little different, for example, than our OTIM analysis, which does use the IMPLAN database. So we start from the same database. But we have what we call a computable general equilibrium model of the Oregon economy that allows for price adjustments. The input-output models hold prices fixed, so it doesn't build in the constraints, which is fine for an impact analysis, but in terms of growth, it's not necessarily realistic over time. Let's say Intel tripled their investment. Well, if they did, we know that would drive up land prices, wages, and drive up costs significantly in the county and the state. So eventually, those cost factors begin to have an effect and slow down the investment over time. So, but those aren't built into this analysis. That's what we call it, a partial equilibrium. You're just looking at holding everything constant and looking at the effect of the specific project. It also, it doesn't mean necessarily, you were talking about this with Representative Unger, it doesn't mean that Oregon would have 68,000 less jobs if Intel weren't here. We would probably have other companies that would have invested. There may have been other opportunities that were taken. So, but that's not what an impact analysis does. This is telling you the impact of Intel. It's here. This is the impact based on what we know about their wages, what they pay, their and taxes, and so forth. But I would also say that the study itself is very much in line with the standards we would see. As I said earlier, they've done this four times, so they've gone through this and laid it out pretty well and explained the caveats pretty well. So I'll refer you back to page one, just to summarize.
Before you do that, just to drive home on the property tax, if you combine the direct property tax that Intel pays, it's about $21 million plus the $11 million community service fee. So that's $32 million. Is there any other taxpayer in the county that even comes close to that?
I would be very... I haven't checked that specifically, but I would think not, no. Remember how the SIP works is it's... it's a $100 million. It's a $100 million floor, so that anything above that, well, that's a cap, I guess. Any property tax above that is not going to be collected. So you've got to have $100 million in investment before you even get any tax break.
And the $100 million is taxed fully.
Yes, the $100 million. So it's a cap on the property taxes that you pay. And of course, you know the origin of the SIP. Statute was in 1993 when the legislature was looking at the magnitude of this investment, which was over $1 billion, and seeing, well, we didn't expect many of those kinds of projects to come along. So the idea was specifically to cap property tax at a certain amount for these very capital-intensive operations. We ended up getting several more SIP projects, more than we thought at the time, because there was a wave of semiconductor investment over the next few years. But still, this is an extremely high level of investment.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Senator Hass.
Thank you, Paul. I have Intel in my backyard, and I continue to be stunned every time I see one of these new reports. On figure 7, Paul, it's got the Intel economic impacts as a share of the total, and it looks to me like under output, it's 8.7%
yes.
of the state, and that doesn't include the construction that's been going on?
Yes, that's correct. The 8.7 would be for ongoing operations.
So if you think, okay, essentially what that says is Intel is 8.7% of Oregon's economy. And that doesn't include $4 billion worth of construction.
Yes.
I'm just stunned. I mean, I know it's a little bit aside from the topic at hand, but this is such an important part of our state's economy and therefore our revenue system. This should be part of your orientation week in the beginning of the legislature because yes. of the incredible importance that Intel has here. And on top of that, I don't think that because their R&D facility is located in Hillsboro, well, those people don't make anything and generate anything or sell anything. So those 2,000 jobs are not reflected in output or sales. So it's even greater than I think some of these numbers look at when you figure in impact.
That's correct, Senator. You know, the output, well, the folks that do the research, I mean, they do figure in the output, but just at unpredictable times and unpredictable ways. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's embedded in there. You do the research there before you generate a product that has a high value added. But you're right, though, there isn't a dollar-for-dollar link between the research that's done and this year's output.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you, Paul. This is very valuable. And to the people in the audience, this is in OLIS, the Intel report. It's also on Intel's website, and it's a pretty stunning report, so I recommend it to people. We have, Jim, did you want to come up and talk about this bill?
If you'd like to.
So you're getting a summary sheet of proposed gain share investments from the county. So I'm sorry, for the record, Jim McCauley, representing Washington County. Chair Burdick, rest of the committee members, I don't want to go, again, too much into the background here. Paul did an excellent job, I think, capturing the intel and then also talking about the framework of the bill. Our intent coming in to this session was to try to find a path forward, a template, if you will, to try to move gain share beyond where it's at right now, still provide a local government incentive to continue signing SIPs on into the future, and continue to provide essentially a framework for a partnership that we thought was valuable enough back in 2007, as well as today, as well as in the future. Senator Burdick actually asked me to bring something to the committee here that would represent an ongoing conversation that the commission has been having for the last year or so in terms of how to structure what type of investments they were going to be putting back into the community in terms of service impacts as well as community infrastructure and things of that nature. What you've got in front of you is really just a snapshot for the county's allocation itself, because I think everybody understands around the committee is once that gain share total is figured, there's an allocation that goes to local government, and then we have a distribution formula that is essentially prorated based on the type of or the scale of the tax that the other partners are part of. So in the case of Washington County, there are shares that go to Port of Portland. There are shares that go to Alton Valley Fire and Rescue. There are shares that go to the city of Hillsborough, for example. But the lion's share of this, a little over 60%, goes to Washington County, another 35% to the city. And then the balance of that goes to the other districts. So what I've got in front of you is essentially just kind of a summary of the conversation that our commission has made over the last year. It's not been set in stone. It hasn't even had a final vote on it and is still open for continued conversation as they've been having over the past several months. They've had a couple of public hearings on this, and they've had public discussions in work session and in full view of the public as well. So it comes down to really a mix of county facilities, ITS, related projects. When I've talked to other folks about this, even though it may not be a great example, we're still using Windows 03. So we're going to be making some of those subtle upgrades, but taking on far more significant upgrades that have been part of what the county does. But from the standpoint of where the priorities are at, there's only a certain percentage of what we can physically spend on those types of projects without this additional funding or incentive. So it's a range, again, from telecom to desktop stuff, other property purchases and things of that nature. There's also a subset here for county bike ped safety projects, and this is a combination of trail crossings, it's street improvements, it's trying to get connectivity to schools between neighborhoods and things of that nature. We have also an event center that our commissioners have talked about for years about trying to make some improvements for economic development purposes. And that, again, is just a snapshot on what 1 year's worth of expenses are. They've talked about this over a five-year or larger time frame, but they honestly can't look beyond the first year of this until the longer time frame or the longer picture has been determined in terms of what gain share is going to look like in the future. So some of these investments are one time. They would like to have them be multiple times, but again, that comes down to the stability that we may be looking at or not looking at in the future as far as gain share is concerned. There's traffic congestion. Basically, it's smart street light, or it's not lights, but smart intersections and things of that nature that can figure out when cars are there and how to move traffic flows without going into that kind of detail. And there's also a special projects opportunity fund that our commission has talked about, and it's a range of community housing fund, which primarily deals with affordable housing projects throughout the county, as well as museum and the Alloa Library. So that's essentially a snapshot in terms of what our commission has talked about with spending this money on. City of Hillsborough has a completely different subset, I'm guessing. I don't even know what it looks like. This conversation is ongoing. The other partners that receive this distribution as well, I'm not privy to what they're going to be making those types of investments in, but again, you're talking about infrastructure-related improvements, community-based type of improvements over time. I don't want to go into the details of the bill again because Paul's already kind of spelled that out. I still think it's important that the committee understand that we believe firmly that this is a but-for argument. But-for SIP and but-for gain share, you don't have Intel and you don't have Genentech.
Why would gain share determine whether you have Intel or not?
Because it has provided in 2007 when the commission and other people came to the table, they felt that gain share was important. Because of the investment back into the community, because of the partnership between the state and local government, and also for some kind of an incentive so that that local community knew that that tax abatement, those foregone revenues, there was going to be some sharing of a rate of return on that type of an investment.
When did you sign your last SIP?
Last SIP would have been signed prior to 2007.
Prior to 2007.
Correct.
So gain share went into effect after you'd already signed the SIP.
Right.
So how does gain share then determine whether you have Intel there or not, since you'd already signed it before the bill went in?
Our commissioners believe that it's important for any future investment, future SIP agreements, to have that in place. That was part of the motivation for leading up to the 07 and actually the 06 conversation over this.
Okay. This $14 million that's in this chart that you gave us, that's only for Washington County share of gain share?
That's correct, and that's just for the 13-14 fiscal
now,
year.
The allocation to school districts, is that something that all the districts allocated some or just Washington County?
That was something that everybody agreed to. There was a new IGA that was formed, so you can add another $5 million on top of this number, because back in 13, if you perhaps recall from the session, but both Chair Dyke and Mayor Willie from Hillsborough agreed to a $10 million allocation to schools to be paid over a two-year cycle.
Okay.
That first $5 million check was distributed.
And the $10 million was based on, was what percentage of the total gain share? The total gain share for that period was how much, Paul, $56 million?
The gain share was $56 million for the 13-15 biennium.
Right. So I'm trying to get apples and apples. So out of $56 million, you gave $10 million to schools. Is that correct?
That essentially is the understanding. We haven't collected on the second half of that check in this biennium yet. So.
Okay. So that's a little less than 20%, and the proportion of money that schools get in the state general fund is about 40%. So it's commendable you did it, because the bill didn't even provide for education. It's commendable you did it, but why didn't you do it to the full level that school districts get at the state level?
I don't have an answer for that. I think people felt that when they had some conversations around, and again, this was primarily a Chair Dyke and Mayor Willie conversation, so I don't know if they approached it, mathematically, or if they just felt, let's look at a $10 million allocation.
Because I'm seeing here, the projects that you have are not really things that I can associate with Intel impact, but schools really would be. I mean, a lot of Intel employees live in Washington County, so I think you could make an argument that there is more pressure on the school when you have more employees. And so I'm just curious, since they're such a big part of the impact on the general fund, why you wouldn't go parity in terms of what the state does.
Mm-hmm. Chair Burdick, I don't have an answer for that. All I can tell you is that our commission and the mayor of Hillsborough, along with their city council, serious about education, serious about sharing these funds with schools, not just this biennium, but in future bienniums. And I don't know if there's a magical percentage on what that needs to be.
Okay. And then, you know, Representative Unger talked about losses from the foregone property tax revenue. Can you name any specific losses that $32 million a year wouldn't cover for Intel, for the impact of Intel in Washington County?
Sure. So, Chair Burdick, right now, the county and the city and the rest of their partners forego somewhere in the neighborhood of $70 to $80 million
year. We get that. But I'm talking about the money that actually goes in to Washington County that other counties don't have. And then it's, you know, $32 million a year in property tax and community service fees. And I'm wondering where the lack is, where the burden is that is not being paid for by $32 million.
I guess the delta comes down to the difference between $32 million and what the actual foregone revenue is. So we'll say $50 million for a number. Now, I can't put that into a physical service number. I can't tell you how many employees.
Well, see, that's a false argument because I was around when the SIP was being argued, and the argument was, if we don't do this, we don't get Intel. And I was persuaded by that argument that that's why the SIP was necessary. So it's not whether you have this amount of money versus $80 million or $50 million more. It's whether you have this amount of money or nothing. I mean, that was the argument that Washington County made to get the SIP in the first place. And now it seems like you're changing the terms of comparison to have this imaginary money that no one believes would be there if you didn't have this break for this high amortizing equipment, this very expensive equipment. And yet they're still paying $11 million, tax on $100 million, plus community service fees, plus system development charges, plus their charitable contribution. I'm not seeing where the burden is and where the loss is in real money.
I understand, Senator Burdick, but again, our commission, the city, other local governments have a different perspective on this. They look at the amount of money that's coming physically in, added whether it's the property tax associated with that first $100 million plus the community service fee, and they still see a physical gap.
Right. And I'm trying to see what is being lost. I'm trying to quantify what is being lost here. When you have all this money coming in, what is actually being lost because of the impact of Intel?
Right.
Senator George.
I think what the chair has been arguing, and you and I have had this conversation offline, but the real question is that let's say that there wasn't the billion-dollar piece of equipment in there, and what it is a warehouse with the same number of employees that go back and forth, and it has, let's just say it's a warehouse or a cold storage facility or something that has similar flows. That what's changing your calculation is that there's a billion-dollar tool inside of that building that's being taxed, and that we're waiving the tax on that. But from some other business that would be brought in without the program, what's the loss? And I think what the chair is trying to get at is, if I can say, is, okay, we're all agreeing that they wouldn't have come here if we taxed the tool. So let's take that off the table. Now, how much are you missing? You see what I'm saying? And what it looks like from all of the statements is Washington County is not missing anything. And so we're just trying to make sure we understand the public policy of why we chose not to tax the tool. Am I correct? I mean, by not taxing the tool, you've got it down to what some other business would pay doing the same kind of impact.
Well, with $100 million of impact.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Do you get what we're asking?
I understand. Sorry, Senator Burdick, Senator George, I think I understand your question. I'm not sure if I've got enough detail in front of me to be able to get back to you. I don't know if you're asking for specific projects on what that loss is. I mean, part of the intent, I think, with this summary is to give you a range of the type of community investments that the county is looking at, okay? So if you want to look at a local government in terms of what they spend, right, what they are physically required to do in terms of service delivery, community infrastructure, et cetera, it hits a whole range of things, anywhere from transportation projects that you might be able to tie specifically to a business, such as Intel, or such as your a Filbert facility, we'll say.
Hazelnuts.
Sorry. And I think this kind of represents part of what that investment looks like going forward. And again, part of this comes down to being able to make a decision over stability of whether or not Gainshare is going to be here next year or beyond. I think once you end up with a question over stability and be able to answer our commission's question over long term, it's difficult to figure out what you're going to do with this money and trying to treat it as one time. I understand the question of the gap and things of that nature, but the gap for them is if that was taxed, that $70 to $80 million per year would have been going someplace within the county. It would have, part of it would have been going to roads, part of it would have been going to other type of investments that the county is making. Now, because this is one-time money, we're not going to add staff, or there's a reluctance to add staff, because you can't count on it in the future. If this money goes away in 2 years and you've added 200 employees or 500 employees to deal with the additional service level, what happens then? I mean, again, you have to look at this in terms of one-time investments until you solve the long-term issue.
Yes, and that's precisely true, but I can't resist. I'm looking over here at Senator Bertinger and some of his counties and just wondering how this list would look to some of the counties that can't even pay for a deputy.
We'll take 1% of that.
And that's about what you get.
Yeah.
Anyway, Senator George.
I'm sorry. You read exactly. I think the problem that we're having is that Washington County has done this great service for the state by taking on the negotiations and being an attractive place to bring in intel. So I represent Washington County, so it's, I think we've done a great job. Now we're sharing state income tax revenue back to backfill Washington County's hole that they supposedly created. In doing so, what we're doing is choosing not to spend them someplace else. And when I look down and I say, I've got to say to the good senator from Josephine County that we can't help you with state police, but you know, $500,000 is being spent on Silicon Forest Green Signals project. I have a hard time in my head justifying how I take $500,000 of state income tax money and say, well, if that's kind of where you spend the money, then there's not a hole, and there's a hole down there, right? Because I mean, I've got people who are being assaulted or raped or whatever, and they can't get a state trooper. And I got Washington County saying, with these dollars, aren't we proud that we're going to have the Silicon Forest Green Signals Project? Well, okay, but that seems so inequitable, you know? You see what I'm saying? And so it looks kind of embarrassing to defend the project when this is my list. You see what I'm saying?
Chair Burdick, Senator George, I fully understand. You know, Paul brought up his point talking about Jack Ward Thomas. So I've got history in that, too, with forestry. And having worked that issue for years, which essentially devastated the economy throughout this entire state. So I get it, that a green light project may not look good to Grants Pass or anywhere else in Josephine County. Now, within the bill, we felt that some of that sharing should have been done statewide as well, which is why we've talked about a 5% shave off the top to go to this opportunity fund. And whether it becomes a regional solutions type of implementing structure for economic development in rural counties, or whether it takes some other vehicle. But again, part of the whole point that I was trying to get to in the front end of this was we created this bill to try to create a path forward. Interest in sharing with a lot of different groups, including the rest of Oregon. We get that there are still distressed counties in this state. And we know that we have been exceptionally successful with Intel. But we also know that that didn't happen by mistake. I mean, we're talking 30, 40, 50 years worth of community investments, whether it's been our taxpayers' dime within our MISTIP program on roads or community infrastructure, neighborhoods, et cetera, right on down the line. We didn't get Intel by mistake, and we haven't kept Intel by mistake.
Senator Hess.
Thank you. I would like to respond to Senator George, because with, you know, as much as I'd like to send deputies to Josephine County, too, in defense of Washington County, you have these 16,000 employees and 16,000 families and 30-some thousand cars, and you need bigger roads, and you need viaducts and fancier stoplights, and you've just got a crush of population to those facilities. So it's, you can't compare small rural towns to a thriving suburban area and say, why don't we just put some of that money there? That would equalize, because you're talking such huge differences of population.
Madam Chair, I think the point was is that I don't want to do that. What I'm actually saying is Washington County, I think the chair has convinced me that there's an issue here, which is, and I didn't agree with her at the beginning, which is I want to make Washington County whole plus some for their efforts, because they deserve to be made whole, that if that was a warehouse with that many employees, they should have the resources to take care of the infrastructure for the exact reason you're saying. I totally agree with that. And I believe Washington County should get additional money because of the fact that they spent so much staff time and had foresight to go do it, and I'm okay with that. The question is that on top of that, there is some additional money coming through this gain share program that is coming out of the general fund of the state of Oregon. And I'm not trying to say how it should be spent. It's just that at some point it gets embarrassing for me as a Washington County legislator to be looking at lists like this and then saying, oh, well, we got to cut state troopers. I mean, it's not that I disagree that they should be made whole, because I do. And it's not that I don't think they should be made whole plus a nice profit, I guess, for having foresight and doing 30 years of planning, and I think that's all good. The question is, where is that line above that where this doesn't start to look ridiculous? And I think that's what the chair has been trying to get at. There's some fairness in there, but this doesn't feel right. And as a legislator for Washington County, I've kind of gotten there, I think. That there's something not right here. Well, and I'm not saying Senator Herman's district, I say.
Yeah, and I'll just remind the committee that the initial revenue impact, which clearly was weighted toward new jobs, was $4.6 million. And the reality was $56 million. And, you know, it reminds me, I know you hate to hear it, but it reminds me of the Betsy program, where we had the really good intentions, and we had a revenue impact of $14 million, and it turned out many-fold higher than that. So when a lot of us were voting this in, we were thinking exactly like Senator George is thinking, that isn't it fair that this county that has gone out of its way to have strategies that brought in this incredible economic engine, shouldn't they get a piece of the action? And it's a different discussion when you're talking about $4.6 million versus $74 million when it's out of the general fund. It's just a different discussion. And that's what we voted on in 2007 in our defense. Senator Hess.
I didn't vote for Betsy or for Gaines.
Senator Hess. Senator Hess completely
rubs it
in that he was not here in 2007.
He slipped out of the building and then slipped back in.
That's right. All right. Well, you deserve some kind of a prize for sitting up there all by yourself and enduring this. So the committee, I will speak for the whole committee. We really appreciate your being here. Are there other questions? Senator Bechner.
I thank the committee for taking this on, because it's taken me a while to get up to speed on that. And as I was sitting here listening to this, I wonder how the conversation would be if Josephine County had Intel and Washington County had a couple of our wildernesses.
Right.
We'd come down and steal some of your deputies.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Jody Weiser.
I I have an appointment and I have to leave the room. So instead of giving my testimony, Jody Weiser from Tax Credit Oregon, I wish you would look at page 14 of the Intel report. And I would love to come back and share much of else I plan to say today because I feel like I learned a lot in the last 8 months. It would be nice to share it. But on page 14, you see the, I think that's where you're going to see how much the state gets in income tax and how much the county gets in property taxes. And typically in this state, the state spends more per capita than the local community does. But if you take half of our money away for these projects and you give it back to the county has significantly more to spend per capita than the state has. So the balance right now is really far off because we're getting way less. It sounds good to say we're going to get $8,000 of income tax per employee from Intel, but we only get $4,000. That's barely above average. And so it's not making up the difference. I can't actually see the chart from here. And I have an appointment, so I must go. I'd love to come back and talk again. Thank you.
There will be other opportunities, I assure you, on this issue. Okay. Anybody else want to testify on this? Okay. Thank you. This has been an interesting hearing. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1532 and open a work session on 1534, Senate Bill 1534. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1534 is the technical fix or the cleanup bill. And I believe the intent of the committee or the amendments of relevance for today are the dash one, the dash five, and the dash six. You have fiscal impacts for each of those. It reflects a minimal fiscal impact. The only amendment with a revenue impact is the dash five. That is the amendment that restores the handicapped child and severe disability personal exemption tax credits. Just to remind the committee, the Dash 1 amendment pertains to the reciprocity agreement with the state of Washington about not taxing over the areas over the two bridges. And then the Dash 6 just adds a number of technical fixes to the bill.
And the Dash 6 is different from the Dash 4 because it takes out, Senator George, would you just elucidate this a little bit for us?
Yeah, the Dash, Madam Chair, thank you. The Dash 4s had a reference to Oregon income, and some folks in our caucus had unsure exactly what that means, and I've been told by staff it really doesn't mean anything. You just clarify some language, and I think that that's perhaps a change that would be better set for next session to clarify that language until people are more comfortable with that language. So it's my understanding it doesn't really change the bill very much, but gives it quite a bit more comfort on our side of the aisle.
Okay, and thank you, Senator George. Committee, I don't fully understand this myself. We'll continue in conversations to see if there's more than we're seeing here that might indicate that we might want to go back to that. But for today, we'll go ahead with the Dash 6 instead of the Dash 4.
So do you want the 1s, 5s, and 6s?
Correct.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1534.
Senator George has moved the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1534. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator George.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 1534.
Senator George has moved the Dash 5 amendment to the Senate Bill 1534. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator George.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 1534.
Senator George has moved the Dash 6 amendment to Senate Bill 1534. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1534 as amended by the Dash 1s, 5s, and 6s to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 1534 as amended by the Dash 1, Dash 5, and Dash 6 amendments to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Well, I haven't carried one yet, so I guess this is it for me. Okay. That was it for the agenda. I was inventing another bill here. It's gotten to that point in the session, and we're only 3 weeks in. Okay. Any other business before the committee? Okay. Thank you, committee. We are adjourned.